This is Daim Shabazz of Chess From, and we're in Wheeling, Illinois, which is just outside of Chicago, at the 2023 Chicago Open. And the seventh round is in progress, and we have quite a field, a lot of young players, as you all can imagine. But I have Adia Onyango here, who is also playing. And you're playing in the under, which section are you playing in?
U19.
Okay, she's playing under 19 section. And you all may know her from being the creator of the Chess Connections Facebook page, which is very active, very vibrant page, and that I have enjoyed over the years. But we're going to talk to Adia about what she's been doing, and she is known to us as the Chess Traveler, and we're going to ask her about her travels and also about some of the projects she's working on. So, but first things first, Adia, how is this tournament going for you?
So far, I would say it's going pretty well, and when I say that, for me, how I define an event going well is my ability to put my whole self into it in terms of my energy, feeling that I'm connected with the board. You know, I'm not as much focused on the results, although that's extremely important to me, but do I feel that I'm playing chess, that I'm connecting with the pieces? And so for me, you know, I would say, you know, every round that has happened. So I've been very pleased with the fact that I've been able to show up at the event. And this was a last minute booking. You know, I actually did not decide to come until the week of, and was very concerned about the ability to disconnect from work and then connect on the board. So I'm quite happy.
Is this your first Chicago Open?
No, my first Chicago Open, absolutely not. My first ever tournament was in 1999, and it was the Chicago Open. Okay. And I played in the unrated section, and then after that I did not play tournaments again until about 2004-2005. But so my first ever tournament, and I actually won in the Chicago Open for the first time a few years, I think, before COVID. So no, I find it to be, it's a very challenging, it's a very competitive event, and but it's not my first one.
So that was 24 years ago.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, that's a long time. And yeah. Now we're in 2023. What other kind of tournaments have you been playing in?
I'm not sure whether I'll be able to make the National Open this year, but it's a tournament that I really enjoy. I really love the way they organize that event, and they have a very competitive women's tournament that occurs before the main event, and it's nicely placed so that there's no overlap and you're able to participate in both. The unfortunate thing as an East Coast person is that we still have classes. If you teach within the school system, our public school goes until the end of June. Okay. So it can be more of a challenge to attend it. So over the years, I've attended it a few times. We'll see whether I'm able to make it this time. But my next event will, it's hard to say, but probably be in June or July.
Well, tell us about the overseas tournaments, because you've been traveling. You're known as the Chess Traveler, and you've traveled. You spent some time in Europe, and I've seen pictures on social media. Tell us about some of those events.
Yeah.
And how they differ from what we have here.
Yeah, my advice to every serious chess player is to take a venture and do at least one abroad tournament, international tournament. And I started with international tournaments in 2013 was my first one, the World Amateur in Romania, and have not stopped ever since. And what I really love about the tournaments abroad, not only are many of them FIDE rated, but you just have such a collection of chess from around the world. You know, at any country that you might go to, you really do get to interact and to compete with players from all over. Most recently, I finally had my coming back tournament after everything we've been through these last few years, and I just competed in the Prague Open, the Prague Summer Open, this past August, and it was a really nice tournament. Another thing that I really enjoy about tournaments abroad is they often will uphold the one round a day model,
definitely.
I enjoy that. I really like that you're able to really put all of your energy into it, focus on your diet, your regimen, your sleep, and game review. You can really focus completely on the event if you have the time, and so I really enjoy that kind of model. But I started playing international tournaments in 2013. That's when I really committed myself to trying to see at least two or three countries a year.
So what's your favorite, what has been your favorite tournament overseas?
Oh, that's a hard question. That's a hard question. I will say, hands down, a majority of the tournaments I've attended overseas have been so well run. You know, you have, very accomplished international arbiters running many of these events, and very well run. I would have to put a top five. I don't think I can say top, but between playing in Barcelona, I played for 19 days straight, doing tournaments back to back in Barcelona, and I think the World Amateur in Romania is definitely up there. And I would say number...
You played in Greece? Did you play in Greece?
Not in Greece. In Vienna. That was in City Hall. So beautiful. Hopefully you don't get distracted by, by everything around you. But I would say those would probably be my top three. But it's really hard.
So what's on your wish list? What places would you like to play?
London Classic.
Okay.
Reykjavik. Okay. That one,
that's a popular one.
Yeah, those are a few on my wish list. And another one is the international train tournament that occurs usually around September.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Those are a few. There are a few more, but those are a few that are definitely on my wish list.
So what are some of the differences? You mentioned the one round a day, and they're well-organized in international tournaments, but what are some of the other differences you notice?
I think if you're trying to work on your FIDE rating, there's no question, hands down, playing abroad can really help with that, because ratings tend to be a lot truer. I feel here in the U.S. sometimes you'll have scholastic players or adult players who may not have the opportunity to participate in as many FIDE events, and as a result players where their FIDE rating might not currently represent their actual level, and that could be harmful in tournaments when you're trying to gain rating points and you are potentially losing rating points to someone who's rated 2,000 FIDE, but they are 2,200 USCF, right? That's something that is really nice that, because they have so many FIDE events in many of these countries, you see more of an accurate FIDE rating in terms of representation. I would say that weighs highly up there in terms of things that I enjoy in terms of international events. And they're tend to be very well run, very well organized.
And you don't have to bring your own equipment.
You don't have to bring your... I remember the first time reading an article, I don't know... I think Sabina Chavez was talking about her first time coming to the U.S. and how shocked she was about
it. Wasn't very positive.
All of that. But, competing abroad, that is, it feels good to not have to bring your own equipment and to compete with wooden boards, these small things. But it makes a difference, right? It these small things add up. So, but it's definitely, the other thing is I just find a wider range of exposure to different openings and different lines as I compete, compete abroad. So that's also nice.
Now, how, in terms of when you go overseas and you play international tournaments, there's probably not many people of African ancestry or even women of African ancestry. What has been your experience in terms of how they've accepted you and how they have looked at you as a chess player?
Yeah, well, I have some funny stories, but that might be for another time. But I would say that in terms of acceptance, you know, you find the chess community is very accepting, and so when you travel, it's no different. We're our own little community, and so you do find people to really embrace you when you travel, and you know, I've had very gracious people have been very gracious with their time, and you know, taking time to show you around, and really appreciating meeting players from abroad. So I definitely have had so many positive experiences when it comes to meeting players abroad.
Are they shocked or surprised at your skill level, at your strength, or how?
Yeah, I mean, I had a funny incident that happened when I was in Sweden. That was where I was trying to find this chess club, and you know, it took me a while to find it. I went to the wrong location, and all of this. I went to the Federation building instead of to the clubhouse. Finally, by the time I found it, it was late at night. Beautiful club. And glass doors, so I could see that there were people inside, but it was closed. It's probably about 10 o'clock at night, I don't remember, it was late. And I'm a chess player, so I know that it can be closed, but we still might be in there until who knows what time. And so I'm knocking on the door, trying to get in. And, you know, they come to the door, and I said, you know, I know you're closed, but I'm from the U.S., and I really, you know, had trouble finding your location. You know, is there any way that I can come in and watch you guys play? And, you know, I would love to visit the club. You know, they kind of looked back, and the guy who was at the door looked back and forth, me to the other person. And, you know, he was not so sure about it, and is hesitant. And so then he said, well, you know, we're really strong players. And so I said, oh, I could just watch, you know. And so he looked back and forth, and then he let me in. And so as I'm walking in, I'm so happy to be there. And so I said, what level are you? I'm expecting that they're grandmasters, of course, at least master. And so he said that they're like about 1900. And I said, oh, so we're the same. And I proceeded to win every single game that I played there that night. I did not lose a single game. But it was a beautiful experience, so much fun. They took me out to dinner after, and just had an amazing time. So, you know, it can come a little bit, you know, in terms of, you know, can underestimate people. That can always happen. We all can do it. But I definitely would say we just have had some amazing experiences. I think one of my more memorable trips, probably my trip that I made to Cuba.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, that was just amazing. And people were just so gracious with their time, no matter their level. I played international masters.
Did you go to Club Capablanca?
Yes, they opened it for me, they said.
Okay.
It was because, you know, it's not always open.
Right.
We played outside the club. We played inside the club. Had an amazing time playing on the strip, you know, everywhere. You know, chess players willing to show me around, even willing to travel with me to other parts. But I said, no, I don't want to burden you that much. But yeah, the chess community is a beautiful community.
It is.
And, you know, even more so the connections you make abroad. And, you know, Cuba was, I really had an amazing time there. And on the last day, I was able to throw a tournament there. And
really? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it was kind of my way to give back. And it was Our friend Vladimir won.
Right.
He took first place, and So I wanted to try to give back and ran a tournament with some cash prizes on the last night that I was there. Blitz tournament, round robin, everyone plays everyone, you know. And that was really such a nice experience. I didn't end up playing a tournament there, and so it doesn't always have to be centered around playing a tournament, but just engaging with the chess community is the beauty of it all. I got to teach some young kids there in the park chess, where, you know, if anyone who knows me knows my level of Spanish is very, very limited. Yo hablo español un poquito, okay? But they didn't know English. But you know, chess is an international language. So even with just some of the basics, you know, I was able to teach some of the young kids chess in the parks out there as well. So Cuba, really, that experience really touched me a lot. Yeah.
And then at Club Capablanca, I played some games there, and, you know, I don't have Spanish, and some of them may not have English, but you can still play chess.
Yes.
And you can even analyze chess.
Yes.
Without having, you know, the common language. But speaking of Cuba, we have in this tournament one of our, you know, I guess you can say, highly regarded players of African ancestry. We have Olini Linares Napoles here, and you have actually met her this tournament. What was that like?
I will tell you, I am one of, I think, her biggest fans. She's been a friend in my head for many years. And I first, you know, by way of the chess drum is how I would have never known about her if it was not for the chess drum. But by way of the chess drum and articles is when I first was able to discover her before 2017. So when I actually went to Cuba for the first time in 2017, you know, that was one of the first things I did before going was, you know, attempt to reach out to her. But so this is the first time we met in person, and it was just, for me, such an uplifting moment, you know, just in terms of just highlighting to me something I preach all the time, which is that representation is so important. But just me seeing that representation of a strong, you know, extremely strong women of Afro-Cuban descent able to reach such high levels, you know, a WGM title and consistently playing in Olympiad and all of these things, you know.
Four-time champion.
And so it's just amazing to just even breathe the air. Like, I'm a true fan.
How was the interaction when you first saw her, introduce yourself? Describe what that was like.
It felt so natural, you know. It felt so natural, and you can just feel that she just an amazing spirit. Even with the language barrier, it was just so natural. It was so natural.
So you probably are going to return to Cuba now, and that you have a new friend there.
I definitely want to return to Cuba, and I would love to for her to be able to come to the U.S. some more. This is our first visit to the U.S., and would love for her to be able to come out to New York and come out to, come out to the U.S. again. But I definitely, returning to Cuba is definitely high on my list of places to return to.
So coming back to the U.S., you some years ago started the Chess Connections, which is a Facebook page, and that had a lot of activity. It was kind of a watering hole for chess, people discussing all kinds of topics. What was your motivation for starting that, and where is it today?
Okay. Chess Connections, I think, I don't know if I started in 2008 or so, early 2000s. And, you know, to me, it's about connecting on and off the board. And networking within chess. I feel that we all bring so much. Chess is such a diverse sport, and it attracts people from all areas and disciplines, and you have so much amazing discourse that can happen. So with coming to Facebook, you know, in around 2008, you know, and with getting into organizing events and things within New York City in early 2000, you know, I first started actually with organizing events in the park in New York, and the goal around that was bringing players out to play, and really I wanted to also get people into classical chess and tournament chess,
as opposed to just the
blitz. Right. And so from there, I actually started a newsletter, and which was called Chess Connections, and actually,
I didn't know about the newsletter.
Yeah.
Was this circulated in New York only?
Yeah, this was circulated in New York. At that time, I was running local events in Queens. And I got up to having, I think, around 40 or so players at some of these local free events for the community. And, you know, it was just really trying to stimulate and encourage players to coming out and playing. And so I felt that when I actually started the newsletter, this is before the Facebook page, mm-hmm. It was before, when I started the newsletter, you know, I wanted to have the dialogue about things that were going on within the chess community in New York City. And so the newsletter really focused on the things that we did at the tournaments, who attended, you know, different players of note throughout New York. So as I was getting into the chess scene, the New York City chess scene, you know, I thought, you know, it was important to start to document some of these things that I was seeing. But in terms of the online appearance of Chess Connection, you know, it's about connecting people on and off the board and being able to connect people from all over and all around the world. And, you know, it's something, chess connects us all. And that's the thing that we have in common. And so being able to have that dialogue, you know, about chess, through chess.
And even you had a separate page on nutrition, because of course nutrition is a big part of chess performance in terms of nourishing the mind and the body as well.
And so with both Chess Connections and the 1C4 was the other group, Chess Connections Cardio Challenge, C4, right. 1C4. But with both of these, I you know, coupled it with different types of events as well. So we used to, especially around 2010, 11, 12, I used to organize, you know, from organizing pop-up events. I think one of my most successful one was a rooftop extravaganza that we did in Midtown Manhattan. It was amazing.
Was that documented on Chess Connections?
This was
that was
a
so
nice.
You don't have to send me stuff, because a lot of people assume I just know about things, and it's like, I didn't know about it. Why didn't I see it on the chess show? I didn't know about it. So
yeah,
that was
a nice one. It was an event where I was in collaboration with other party promoters around New York City, and we were able to do something at a rooftop bar in Manhattan, and we had a number of people come out from the New York City, New Jersey area, different coaches and organizers, people like the late Sharu Robinson and Bobby Stewart was in attendance, and you know, a number of other chess players. It was a very nice event. But you know, so back in those earlier days, I was really focusing on organizing events. I would put together chess and volleyball events, chess and ice skating.
I had no idea. I had no idea of these activities.
Yes.
Chess and volleyball.
Yeah. It was, I've done chess and biking events.
Well, I know about that one.
Yeah. So one C4, I think the third page that I've been very proud of was Women and Girls Do Play Chess. And, you know, the impetus for that was the fact that wanting to make sure that our voices as women are heard. And sometimes I feel like our voices can get drowned out when, you know, we have a group of 3,000 and the percentage of women in there are much smaller. And so one of the goals with that group was that I always wanted to have at least 80 to 90% of the group be women. And so that group is a little more restricted in terms of who can join, in that it's one where I want to make sure that I'm hearing the voices of women within chess. You know, whether it's that we're posting about different things about women in chess or commenting about different things. And so I try to have a balance, and I've coupled that with a lot of activities as well. So we've done, especially pre-COVID, we've had a number of get-together and brunches with chess, as well as...
You have brunches too?
Yeah. I've had women come out all the way from Maryland to travel down to Maryland, D.C. Area.
I think I vaguely remember that being posted somewhere.
Yeah. So, but, you know, and more recently, I actually was able to start a put together an all-women's team in the Commercial Chess League, and first all-women's team in the 95-year history of the league. And our first year, we tied for first place.
Who was on the team?
So I will say one thing I'm really proud of with the team is just the representation. And we were the most diverse team in the league, I would say, in terms of having women from all over the world, from China to Colombia to Chile represented to... there's some other Ireland, in a number of different areas. But we had women from beginners under 1,000 all the way to WGMs and WIMs on the team. But when we started out, it was just four of us. And we were able to grow to that level. WIM Bahar participated on the team. Beatrice Marinello participated on the team, as well as a number of other amazing women. Going through the list in my head.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about all these activities, but also we can pivot and talk about some of your activities for girls that you're coaching. Let's hear about some of your coaching activities.
Okay, well, yeah, I would say with coaching, you know, I'm always interested in growing, you know, women and girls in chess. You know, with coaching, I am coaching girls, coaching boys. We're still, always focused on, you know, trying to grow women and girls in chess. Very, something that's very important, near and dear to my heart. I've been running programs in the New York City area for over 15 years now. So I've had programs in private schools, in public schools, and have also been coaching with teams for since around 2016. I've actually been coaching young children throughout the New York City area for the last 15 years, 15 plus years. And it's been an amazing journey from, first focusing on working on, you know, my own chess to focusing on the next generation and trying to plant those seeds, concurrent with still working on my own chess.
Do you find that coaching helps your chess? For some people, they'll say it sometimes can slow your progress because you're studying at a level, you're teaching kids at a much lower level. That's
so
not where you're at.
The way that I always break it down, I don't feel that it slows your chess. I've heard that theory from many coaches. But I think it's like any other job. It's separate. And so if you want to grow your own chess, you're not growing it based on coaching. You then have to invest the time in yourself. And, you know, just like if you were working on Wall Street 9 to 5, you know, if you wanted to work on chess, you then have to find and carve out time outside of those work hours to work on your own. I think if you come into it thinking that because you are working on chess with students, that it will somehow enhance your chess, they're two separate things. And so I think that I don't see how it can inhibit you. I've heard people say that. I don't see how it can. But it is, you still do need to carve out your time, your protected time, to work on your own self-improvement. They're separate, right? So, So I don't think that it's, I think it's no different than working any other job. It takes time and hours out of your life, and you then just have to find a time. And if you don't, that won't be adequate and sufficient for your own improvement and development.
So, yeah, I was talking to Jimmy Canty, who does a lot of streaming, and he talked about how streaming and doing his commentating has actually helped his chess. But in terms of your goals in chess, where do you see yourself going, and what are your goals in chess?
That's a great question. My first and foremost, you know, one goal of mine that is to reach master. I've reached as high as expert, national expert, and so I definitely want to reach reach national master, to reach FIDE master, and to also to achieve an international title, which is another benefit of traveling abroad as well, attempting to achieve some of those things. So those are some of my, I would say that I have different goals in different spheres. So I have my, potentially my tournament goals, I have community goals, I have, outreach goals. So I would say in terms of tournaments, I definitely want to be able to achieve those levels, and I also want to continue to grow and continue to do things, grassroots things within the community, and there are a number of things that I've done over the years, and I want to continue to try to put forth blueprints to help the next generation to be able to go through and get through some of those hurdles a lot easier, and in terms of working with the next generation. So that's something that's really important to me, as well as, you know, continuing to work on projects dealing with women and girls in chess, and really continuing to nurture and help to do what I can to contribute to growing women and numbers of women and girls in chess, throughout the U.S.
I have one last question. Mm-hmm. Now, you have roots in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you've been to Kenya, and do you have any plans of going back to Kenya and doing programs and playing for the national team? Or anything like that? Any ideas about Kenya?
Kenya is home, and the last time I was in Kenya was actually some time ago, starting my travel journey in 2013, and I actually competed out there. It was an amazing time, and I definitely would love to all of the things that you talk of, would love for that to be a part of of my story, and if it's meant to be, then it definitely will be. But you know, I haven't locked down exactly when I will be, you know, my next trip to Kenya will be, you know. I almost went very recently, actually, but that wasn't able to happen. But I would love to start a work on work on different projects within Kenya. This was something I tried to talk about a little bit when I was out there, you know, and trying to make some of those connections to make something something happen. But yeah, so all of that is definitely near and dear to my heart. And you know, in terms of, you know, things like Olympia team, you know, that's something you'll know. We'll see. Right? One could not say. You know, it's definitely not something I would shy away from if it was able to happen. You know, I would love to, love to play under the Kenyan flag.
Well, we talked about you, your travels. To Hungary, and the next Olympiad is in Budapest, Hungary, and so maybe we'll see you playing for the Kenyan national team then. You can go back to Budapest wearing the Kenyan flag on your chest.
Well, I tell you, my ancestors would be proud for sure. If that is able to happen, I would definitely love to you know, if something like that can happen.
And even if it doesn't happen, mm-hmm. you can still go to the Olympiad and experience that once in a lifetime. It is absolutely amazing experience. And
I've been told that it is a must, a must-see event. You know, that's another... Actually, I think I need to add that to my list of... from this conversation... I will definitely start creating my must-do events, but the Olympiad's been on there for a while. Actually.
Well, you know, there was talk about trying to have the first Olympiad hosted in the United States because there's never been an Olympiad here, and I was, you know, actually I was
you were
pushing the idea, but I haven't gotten total buy-in on it because maybe a lack of creative thinking, pessimism, but that's something that's a long-range goal.
I would love if it happened. It would give so many players and so many U.S. players an opportunity to experience it. Mm-hmm. However, for me, I would still want to count an international.
Definitely.
Yeah, I would like to experience it in another country. But of course, if something like that was able to happen, that would be an amazing opportunity for so many U.S. players to be able to be exposed to that. Mm-hmm. Completely, you know, just the true international impact of chess is, you know, I'm sure just completely displayed at the Olympiad.
So. And a lot of side events are happening, and then you have the General Assembly and all those meetings. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. But thank you for all of this time that you've spent with us and your wisdom and your inspiring, and you're doing great things in chess, and we're very proud of you, and we look forward to your future post about your chess travels, and good luck on your quest to becoming a master, national master, or any of those titles that you seek.
Very nice. Thank you. And I just want to say also, just thank you for all that you do. In fact, when I first came to the, you know, I started playing chess when I was in middle school, and it wasn't until I was in grad school where I really started to get into tournament chess and all of that. And when I got to the New York scene, I started to peruse, you know, the some of the magazines and everything that was out there, I didn't find the representation that I really was seeking. This was around early 2000s, like 2004, 2005. And at that time, I started to say, well, maybe then I need to try to do something. And so, of course, as someone who comes from an academic background, what's the first thing you do? You do your research. And that's how I came upon the chess drum. And I started to come upon articles on people like Medina. And I said, wait, there's somebody already doing this. Okay. And, you know, this was a beautiful thing, you know. And so I just want to say thank you to all that you are giving to our community in terms of making sure that our stories are being told and that are being captured. And, you know, there's so much that I have been able to, you know, capture and learn and share with students and everything, and you know, all through the chess drum. And so I just want to say thank you to you for all of the time, you know, because you know, you put so much time into all that you are giving to, you know, the world and our community. And I just want you to know that it's not so much appreciated. And you know, it was one of the best things that I found in 2005. So,
well,
thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate it. On that note, positive note, we're going to end the interview. And thank you for your time. And this is Daim Shabazz with Leo Onyango. And we're signing off.